Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week. Many blessings to you.
I love Emerson, who says, "It is only our finite self that wails and suffers." Simultaneously, there is this infinite presence that lies stretched in smiling repose. And then I hear this question from Scripture, "Choose you this day who you will serve." Are we going to serve the nattering nabob of negativity, the finite self that goes crazy with every little outer condition? Or are we going to put our attention on this infinite presence that lies stretched in smiling repose? And you know how you do? You just smile. And then you feel, what is smiling within my heart? We just got back from a little vacation down to Ocean Springs. And everywhere we went, we walked our little pug in his stroller. And I swear to God, he is a magnet. Everybody stopped and wanted to talk to him, and he just sat there in his zen, still, silent way and held darshan, transmitted his little sweetness, and I witnessed how interconnected we all are. So this Sunday morning, we're going to explore the way under the way and explore deeply this idea of time as a garden. Knowing that it takes time for a seed to germinate and put down roots and begin to grow. It takes time to grow a life and to discover meaning in that life. And so we enter into this garden called the Center for Spiritual Living, and we reflect on the time that it takes to emerge as our true self. We observe the time that it takes to move from fear, which is predicated on me, into love, which is predicated on we as all. And so we're shifting out of this idea of ourselves as separate into a remembrance and a realization that we are all connected in that one life. And that subtle shift creates a field of love that is bigger than we are. And we get to allow for the passageway of its realization through our own understanding, so that wisdom then begins to blossom with time. All we have to do is show up for the moment and tend the garden of life, the garden of love. And when you're ready to play in that field with me, I invite you to open your eyes. Just enter into this space. It was so sweet in the revealing service. Beloved Seamus told about the first time he was here at the old center and how I'd given a talk, my first talk he ever heard on mindfulness. And he was so impressed with the mindfulness talk, the first thing he did was get in his car and back up and hit a van. And I said, "Shay, it takes time for wisdom to flower in a mindful way. It's only been 23 years now." That's sweet. So it takes time to grow a God seed, and what you are is a God seed. I'm 74 years old now, and I was reflecting last week. Last Sunday was March 12th, and it was the 5th anniversary of my heart attack. And on the Zen calendar yesterday, it said, "The only way to appreciate life is to approach every day as if it were the last day." And so when we embrace death, paradoxically, we're embracing life. And so I read that several times thinking, when you know that death is imminent, it doesn't become the enemy. It becomes a companion in a strange sort of way. Our beloved Barbara Rollins, her daughter Haley, who I married at the other center, made her transition on Friday. And it's a mysterious, we don't know the cause of her death. She had a headache on Thursday night, and they found her passed on Friday. And whenever I encounter those stories, initially there's a shock. And then I always go back into what doesn't die. What is eternal? And I know that I'm doing that right now with my twin sister. I talked to Barbara, and Barbara's in shock. And I shared with Barbara, I said, you know, my twin sister, she comes to me now. And it's really strange. She doesn't come to me as the adult woman that I know. She comes to me as the little girl that used to hold my hand. And she was bigger than me. I was the runt of the litter. And she took care of me as the little boy, all through kindergarten, through nursery school. And when we got to first grade, I remember they split us up. They said, we don't want twins to be together. And I remember screaming that they pulled me away from her. I kept holding on to her. They pulled me away from my twin sister. And, you know, it kind of feels like that with her death, like they just pulled her away from me. And yet she came back as this little girl and to tell me that she's with me. And I know I sound crazy, but death is a very strange sort of thing. You know who keeps popping up on my phone is Bert. He's the old dog that made his transition. And he says, well, you know, I'm still with you. I'm just not in form anymore. So you're just going to have to tune in. You got more on the other side now than you got on this side. And so could we learn to connect to spirit on a different level in this field of love? You know, the teaching of Science of Mind is a synthesis of all the great spiritual paths on the planet. And that's what I love about it. It's not bound by one Judeo-Christian way of thinking. One of my teachers is Swami Satchitananda. Now, Satchitananda is a state of consciousness in Sanskrit. Sat is truth, Chit is consciousness, and Ananda is bliss. So when you are in the state of Satchitananda, and that's what the name he chose, this beautiful guru, he says you're choosing to be in an awakened place in consciousness, and all work is done in consciousness. We don't try to fix the world or change the world out there. We realize that once consciousness shifts, and you move out of the identity of the egoic self into the true nature, well, then we're all one. So here's how Satchitananda, this beautiful saint, I remember, here's this gorgeous Hindu saint. He says, you cannot stop the waves of life from flowing, but you can learn to surf. Well, I'm just saying. So here's what he says. Hinduism, Catholicism, Judaism, these are all the isms with different decorations. But they all have the same basic principle, that the individual must become fit to realize that there is a cosmic oneness. There's only one power here. Brahman breathed into Atman and out came us. The one life breathed into creation and we are that creation. But we are also the Brahman. And he says that there's this cosmic oneness, to know that he is not different from the cosmic one. Well, you're not different from the cosmic one. Any one of you. Is that too big of a vision? He goes on to say, let us accept all the different paths on the planet as simply different rivers running toward the same ocean. So whatever river you're taking, it all goes back to the same ocean, the ocean of oneness, the ocean of truth, the ocean of life. It doesn't need to be an ism anymore. So just a little bit more. And then he says, Swami Satchitananda says, once you feel that you are a part of the whole, that's W-H-O-L-E, once you feel that you are part of the whole, that you belong to the whole, and that the whole world belongs to you, we are the world, we are the ones who make a better place, so let's start loving one another. The world belongs to you, that very feeling then engenders within you a feeling of love. And that very love brings forth a healing vibration from within you. So what if when we show up here as an expression of divine love, we are attracting love? And that love, when two or more are gathered in that frequency of love is potentiated. So he's basically inviting us to grow the garden of love, Swami Satchitananda. You need not even touch or see people. You just think of them and your heart is filled with love. Adam tells me that when he gets distracted throughout the week, he just remembers the healing circle on Sunday mornings and his heart opens because he feels the connection that's still there. He says, by your mere thinking, you're sending healing vibrations out in the world. No healer can heal without universal love. No healer can heal without universal love. I was sharing with Jody that I saw minutes about dogs, and it was about animals and about how animals are so smart. And on my desk this morning, there was a little sign that said, "Animals make us better humans." And in the animal world, they know when it's time to make their transition. They don't try to sustain life as we do here on the planet. No, they go off when they're ready to go. And they showed how beautiful that the intelligence within them, I've fulfilled my purpose here. Now I'm ready to go to the Rainbow Bridge and see Bert and Speck. If you realize that you are not just an individual, Swami Satchitananda says, but you are a part of the whole universe. How many ways do I have to say this to you on Sundays? I'll give you a reference point that you can't deny. You're part of the whole universe. You will not be afraid then of anyone or anything because it's all you. You don't have to be afraid. So this journey is about moving from fear into love, to not be afraid of those who are different. I was sharing with my prayer partner. We got home from Ocean Springs last night, and I was working on the sermon, and I had the TV on, and Turner Classic Movies had the end of Giant, the last movie of James Dean. And it was at the very end of the movie when Elizabeth Taylor's got gray hair and Rock Hudson, her husband, had gray hair. And they had their beautiful daughter and their handsome son. And the handsome son married a Mexican girl. And this was at a time in Texas in the 1960s when they brought the Mexican daughter-in-law with the baby to the restaurant to have dinner. They wouldn't serve her. They called her a wetback, and he said, "Can I get my grandson some ice cream?" And he said, "Get him a tamale or a taco. He doesn't belong here." So then an old Rock Hudson stood up, and he started attacking the head of the restaurant. And before you knew it, there's a fight like nothing I've ever seen. And Elizabeth Taylor says to Rock Hudson, "Now I know why I married you. You showed so much integrity fighting for your granddaughter in the face of ignorance and bigotry." And I thought, well, this may be 1960, but we had prejudice way back then, and it's time to stand up to it. And that's what he did in the movie. Anyway, communicate, Swami Satchitananda, since it's all you, and we don't have a hierarchy. And this is what I had to pull this out. Swami Satchitananda said, all of life is speaking to you. And then he says, communicate with a flower today. Well, I don't know how you could do. What happened to the pink carnation, Miss Dia? Oh, it went with Emily. This pink carnation fell off the bouquet, and Adam stuck it in my lapel, and then I gave it to Tia, and now the pink carnation is with Miss Emily. It's doing its Reiki magic, because she's a Reiki master. So communicate with the flower, and then Swami says, it is already smiling at you. I have a sign in our garden from Emerson that says, the earth laughs in flowers. So what if when you're taking your stroll through the winter garden, you see a flower looking up at you and smiling, saying, do you see me? I see you. Yeah. Communicate with the flower. It's already smiling at you. And real communion with God is communion with all beings. Take darshan with a tree. When we were in Ocean Springs, the thing I love about that old southern town is they have ancient live oaks. I mean, they're like 300 years old. They're huge, and they're covered with tree ferns, and they're reverent. They teach them. They consider their trees sacred down there in Ocean Springs. You know who loved that was my little husband, because he tries to save the trees here in Huntsville. I drove past Star Market this morning on the way to the church, where I would pull into shop, and I noticed that they'd cut the tree down by the back door, and then they cut the second tree down to the step. All the trees have been cut down in front of Star Market. And I went, oh, I hope Trey doesn't see this because he doesn't handle stress very well. Let us feel that we are the children of the one presence, the one Father, the one Creator, that we are all interdependent. Thich Nhat Hanh says that we inter are. He says there's an inner beingness, that we're not separate. So could Swami Satchitananda said, it's all you. There's an interdependence. It links in the same beginningless and endless chain. It's a beginningless and endless chain. That means there's no birth and there's no death. It's eternal life. Well, can we stretch our mind to imagine a life that was never born and a life that never dies? A love that was before all creation? That love breathed itself into existence and you showed up? Well, anyway, he says, it links us in the same beginningless and endless chain. We are cells of a huge universal body. I'll say that again. We are cells within a universal body we are all one. I remember when Barbara Marx Hubbard had her mystical breakthrough in the 1960s, and her statement was, "Oh my God," she said, "I'm a cell in the body of God. We are all cells in the one life." Well, now that's the invitation. Could we experience that flowering within us? So then we're not, it's not God and us, it's God through us. We were talking about the way under the way, and someone mentioned the Tao Te Ching, and that's an ancient mystical teaching from Asia. And the Tao means the way. The Tao is that which is always flowing. And they say the Tao that can be described is not the Tao. And they say who tries does not know, and he who knows does not try. So even the fact that I'm trying to describe a way that is so much bigger than all of us, it is the way, the truth, and the life, and no one comes to the Father but by me. That is this Tao. But the interesting thing is, in the Tao Te Ching, the simple second word, De, T-E-H, is it moves through manifestation through all form. So here's the way under the way. You are the way under the way. The way is the Tao, and it needs a Michael. It needs an Adam. It needs an Angkor. It needs a Gigi and a Raoul. It needs a Susan. It needs us in order for itself to be revealed. So could we be humble enough to say, okay, I am here to express the beauty of my soul in everything that I do, because everything is a part of me. And so much of it is to be tending the garden. I pulled out my book, For the Love of God, which is an oracle. I've got to teach this again. It's about 100 people that speak from that place, from that place, from that place. And I pulled out Ken Keyes today, because Ken Keyes, he's been a student of Eastern teachings forever. And he came up. He said, "I discovered love, I discovered God through a living love. I know that God is love, and I love and I serve God in the form of doing what I can to help others. If I have a tender concern for all life, if I treasure this irreplaceable planet Earth and its resources that sustain us, and if I continually open myself to growth and spiritual awareness," isn't that why we're here, is to grow spiritually? And where do we grow spiritually? Through conscious awareness. Awareness is the Lord of everything. And so are we identifying with our egoic mind, which has beliefs and concepts and conclusions? Or have we shifted and stepped back from this narrative to an emptiness that is alive with awareness? That's the balcony place that I invite people to go to. Go to the balcony and observe you down here, manipulating and struggling out there in the world. Could you move into that awareness and say, "I am the one that's observing myself going crazy. I'm not the crazy one." Then you have that beautiful, detached, engaged way of looking at life. So he says, "If I treasure this irreplaceable planet Earth and its resources that sustain us, and if I continually open myself to growth and spiritual awareness, then whatever form ultimately turns out to be true, I'll pass with satisfaction into whatever may await me, learning the lessons of life, learning the lessons of love. No matter what happens, it's here to show me who am I being in this day. If I'm reacting, well, then I'm caught up in resistance. But if I can look at the troubles of the world and not make them a problem, but see it as an opportunity to shift the way I perceive it, well, then we can be a part of the solution and not part of the problem." And it's always like that, isn't it? You know, I have my beloved Tia to remind me. You know, it's how you look at things. And things, you look at change when the one who's looking at it is a different person. When you stop looking at relationships and see them as toxic or a problem and start seeing this as an opportunity where I get to meet my resistance in whatever dynamic I've been in, well, then you set yourself free of whatever narrative that might be entrapping you at the time. And it takes time to do that. I love the idea of a garden. You know, I have these beautiful gardens that I grow, and I've been doing it for a very long time. And Jean Ann texted me and she says, "Do you have a peony growing in your garden?" And I said, "Yeah, I have peonies growing in the garden." And she's concerned about them getting scorched when we get down to 22 tonight. And I said, "Yeah, that is a concern. But you know, you get to know that a garden has resilience, and life oftentimes we think is not there, and yet it surprises us that it can come back." Well, what if that's true of relationships too? Sometimes you think a relationship's dead, and then all of a sudden it comes back to life. Or your spirituality, you think you've learned. I remember this minister friend of mine, she said, "There's nothing left to learn. I've learned everything there is to learn." I said, "Boy, I feel sorry for you, because every day is a growth opportunity to go deeper into this realization of what we are. And it takes time to do that. So if you've been around as long as I have, and you realize that so much, I'm going to be teaching this class starting Wednesday, this thing called You. And Dr. Ernest Holmes, he talks about how we get to participate in life in a really proactive way. And he says, all is love and all is law. And he says, love leads the way. Hopefully it's your guiding light. And then the law makes the way possible. And so then you hear this idea, do what you love. And whatever it's supposed to happen will unfold. Could we pursue a life that comes from love, that comes from choice, that comes from the soul? Dare I use the word soul? And see what happens. I read this when I was down at Ocean Springs. I read this book from cover to cover, Discovering Your Soul Signature by Panache Desai. I studied with his father, Amrav Desai, who's the head of the Kripalu Institute. And this young man, in his daily journals, talks about moving from a consciousness of fear into a consciousness of love. It's exactly what Ken Keyes is talking about with Swami Satchitananda. And this is at the very end of the book where he gets you to the place, what you're supposed to be. And he says, you have made the journey from fear and you're now in love. So you have softened into yourself, knowing that what you are is love, Miss Tia. You're not the one who's resisting the world and trying to change it, Seamus. No, you've yielded into the softness of love. Your dog knows that. And he says, you've been born into yourself. It's about time, isn't it, Gigi, to be born into yourself. Be who you is, not who you ain't. Because if you ain't who you is who you ain't. And if you is who you ain't, you ain't who you is. So be who you are, which is divine love. He's saying this. And he says, so, he asks the question, how are we choosing to show up for each moment? What is the tone of this inner voice? Remember, you're in the balcony. You're observing the voice within. Well, I'm just saying, Miss Susan. What's the voice within saying? You're the balcony and you're the voice. Well, I'm Panache. He says, what is the tone of this inner voice? Is it an angry teacher? Or is it a benevolent presence? Isn't it nice to find it's a benevolent presence most of the time? Sometimes it's an angry teacher. You know, we all get that. You know, if you've been driving on the interstate, you know what angry teachers are like. Or a benevolent presence that says, I can get off these crazy roads and I can take the byways with Miss Jody and I'll find it's not so bad. Just for today, he says, focus on the way that you love yourself. You can't love the world if you can't love yourself. Now, that's not an ego trip. So what's the most loving thing we could do for ourselves Sunday morning? Maybe it's to show up here and to drink from that fountain of love, which we do on Sunday mornings in that revealing service. Just for today, focus on the way you love yourself. And this is not a selfish thing to do, he says. On the contrary, it is the greatest gift that you can offer everyone else in your life. Because chances are, if you're loving to yourself, you'll be loving to them as well. You notice how what we are speaks so loudly? So he goes on to say, you are filled with love. And the more you can be available to everyone around you in a spacious, gracious way, just for today, know that you deserve your own love and that you have love to spare and to share with the world. So this is how he's leaving you in this book. Once you contact your soul, your soul's journey is to offer this divine love to the world. And it's all the same. That's why animals are so powerful, because they don't have a filter and they love with equanimity. They love all. So he goes on to talk about love, not as a personal something that we have, but as something that's universal. Now, this is the big picture, so I'm going to give it to you. It's really big, Miss Terry. This is what your little girl wanted when she went to Bible school. He says, where does love begin? Is there a starting place? He said, a seed that is planted somewhere that grows into something that we can feel or see. Does love have a house? Does love have a face? Does love have a body? Does love have a voice? Does love have a form? And he leaves you in that question. Don't seek the answers. Stay in the question. But he gives you an answer anyway. What does he say? In all capital letters, love exists. Period. All there is love. Love exists. And then he goes on to elucidate. Love has always existed. what if the universe wasn't a big bang, it was love exhaling, and it created all of this? Love existed before there was an earth. Oh, I think he's taken us out into the cosmic realms. What do you think, Miss Gigi? Before there were galaxies, love existed. I love it when it gets big like this, because it kind of blows the mind, doesn't it, Angkor? Before the galaxies, love existed. Let's get big with this stuff. Before anything we know, as life came into being, love is the ocean in which we swim. And Rumi says all swimming in the ocean of love ends in drowning. What he's saying is then there's no you, it's just the love. It's a metaphor. It's the air that we breathe. Wow. Take this breath and let that breathe in love and exhale gratitude. Every breath is a sacred breath. And then you know God is the breath within the breath. Holy God, that's pretty big, isn't it, Adam? And that all there is the breath of God, and we're breathing in the breath of God. Boy, it takes you right out of your religious doctrine, doesn't it, into this realization of oneness. He said, love existed before there was an earth. It permeates every particle, every molecule, every single aspect of our experience. And if we cannot trace love back to its beginnings, guess what that means? Then surely we know that love never began and love never ends, because love just is. So when we lose a loved one and they're no longer in their form, the love is still here and it never went anywhere. In the Sufi tradition, they say we come and we incarnate with light and with love. And when we leave this mortal coil, we take the light with us, but we leave the love behind. Now, isn't that a lovely way to think about it? So to know yourself as loves, the hand of love has touched your life from its inception. The hand has never wavered. You know, when you can reflect back, and the gift of my twins passing was they send all these photographs of her and me as little kids. And I can remember the feeling of love at such a very young age. I had, my parents were young and they were madly in love. It's hard to imagine your parents as hotties and in love, but I saw photographs and they were hotties and in love. And then I saw my brother who took care of me and my little twin sister who held my hand. And I realized I was experiencing the love that never died. Now my brother's made his transition, my parents are gone, and my twin is gone. I'm all that's left. Well, but the love is still there. So could I stretch enough not to identify with form, but to identify with reality? The hand of love has touched your life from its inception. The hand has never wavered, and it gently ushers on. It offers us support, and it offers us guidance. It comforts us. It points you in the direction that you never would have dreamed of. You know, love brought me into this teaching. I love what Seamus said. He said, I found in this place what my soul had been looking for 40 years. I wanted a spirituality that wasn't based on ignorance and lies and judgment and sin, but a spirituality that was based on this expansive realization that we're all part of it. We're not separate from it. And that we're all each other. He's going on to say, it offers you support and guidance. You are holding the very last pages of this book. And this book itself, he said, is love. Because all there is love. So I'm passing on Panache's wisdom to you, Angkor. His transmission. He says, the hand that turns this page is not separate from the page itself. Oh, I guess he's talking about oneness, isn't he, Miss Susan? The reader and the words are one and the same. Thich Nhat Hanh would say, when you hold the book in my hand, do you see the page or do you see the tree? Do you see the sun? Do you see the rain that made the page? You know, it's all part of that. Do you see the one that cut the tree down, that processed and made the pulp, that made the wood, that made the paper, that created the book? You know, it's all interconnected now. So he says, know that love is all around you. And should you for a moment forget that this is the case, you need no look no further than right there within yourself. Be still and know that I am God. It's just 11 o'clock, Michael. Be still and know that I am God. You find it here. You find it here. You find it here. He says, the end is really just the beginning. And then he said, I close all my talks and all my classes, and I'm going to close this book with what I always say. He says, I love you and thank you for loving me, because it's all love. I love you, and thank you for loving me, because we know that it's all love. Oh, isn't that sweet? So that seed of love grows one breath at a time. Isn't it nice to know that we have committed to something bigger than ourselves? And you know, when you give yourself to love, well, love pours itself into you in ways that you can't imagine. We'll be fortunate if we see it in form reflected, but what if all form is reflecting it? You know, that's the gift of that little one-eyed pug of mine, because when we were wheeling him around Ocean Springs, all these people came to look at him and talk to him, and he just sat there in his zendom, and he just looked at them, couldn't really see because his cataract's over the one eye. But, you know, he knew, and they said, is he friendly? And I said, sure. And so they would pet him and touch him, and you could call it love, but I call it merely an exchange of energy. He was being patient with them as they were fawning over him. Oh, how cute he is, how pathetic he is, how ugly he is. He smells. Yes, all that. All that, and so much more. It's you. Not that you smell, not that you're blind, but it's you. So I thought I would close with a little Ernest Holmes. Raoul, you want to get to the bell? And I'll give you one of his prayers at the end of the book. Because what he does is he sows seeds of our own divinity through one prayer after another. And I find myself reading the prayers out loud because I know that I'm seeding myself with my own divine awareness. Could I receive those seeds and let them grow within consciousness and then observe how it outpictures in the abundance of my life, how it outpictures in relationships in my life, how it outpictures in health in my life, because it's all an inside job. So Ernest Holmes would, this thing called you is the greatest opportunity that you and I have. And you know, we've been given a gift. We've been given this one life to be a steward of. What are you doing with this one life? Are you expanding it into its potential and possibility? Or are we accepting a role that doesn't serve us by society? Have we been clever enough to realize that the universe wants something, wants a masterpiece from you? Is it too much to ask for a masterpiece? I remember I'm coming up to my 34th anniversary on Easter. And I remember one of my very first talks was called The Unfinished Masterpiece. And that's you. And that's me. So if it's an unfinished masterpiece, how would we then let this thing called you, me, it, all flower within the body of our experience? Well, here's the end of the book. I like going to the ends of the books because you get the juice. So, Raoul, you want to ring the bell? And I'll do this little prayer and then I'll take us into a closing meditation. Ernest Holmes, he says, commune with this invisible presence within you until there comes a certainty which is beyond hope, something which enables you to see clear-eyed the future as you see the past. Know that God grants that you shall enter into this freedom today by simply saying these words. So take these words for yourself. I refuse to worry about anything. I have complete confidence that God, who is always with me, is able and willing to direct everything I do, to control my affairs, and to lead me into the pathways of peace and happiness. I yield to this higher intelligence. I put it in charge. Last week I talked about true prayers when you recognize I don't have the answers. I can surrender to something greater. He's saying the same thing. I free myself from every sense of condemnation, either against myself or against others. Can't afford to judge anyone at this stage of life because it's all me. I free myself from every sense of condemnation, either against myself or others, and in so I lose every sense of animosity. I'm just like Herman. I just want to love everyone. I now understand that there is a principle and a presence in everyone, and it's gradually drawing us into the kingdom of our good. This presence is taking us to the good. Jesus said it's the kingdom of heaven that's within. So could we defer to this intelligence of love and harmony and balance and let it take us into the good that's waiting for us? Divine love brings together and maintains together in harmony and balance those who belong together. So what if we defer to divine love? He's saying, this presence in every person gradually draws us into the kingdom of good, and I know that that kingdom of good is at hand, and I am resolved to enter into this kingdom, to possess it, and to let it possess me. I'm no longer going to be an alien to the truth of my being. I'm going to step right in the midst of that vortex of divine love and say, this life belongs to you. Lastly, I know that the Divine Spirit is operating through me now. Feel that. I know that I am not limited by anything that has happened or by anything that is now happening. I am entering into an entirely new set of conditions and circumstances. Praise be. That which has no limit is flowing through my consciousness and it's flowing into action. So I am guided by the same intelligence that inspired some of the greatest imaginations in the world, which scatter the moonbeams across the waves and hold the forces of nature in its grip. I'm stepping into something that is so much greater than me, and I'm giving it permission to guide me and inspire me as I take the next step. I am conscious that Divine Spirit is acting through me now. I am aware that the truth is making me free from my own beliefs and lack of limitation. There is no doubt or uncertainty in my mind. I have a feeling of security and an ability to do anything that I should. I am not afraid of life or death, for I know that death is swallowed up in life. I love to hear that. And I know that every living soul will find complete emancipation sooner or later. Let's set the soul free here today. What do you say? Therefore, I stand amidst the eternal ways of the universe, and I let the winds of change blow full and free around me, and I say, I have arrived, I am home in the changeless eternal now, in a world that changes all the time. Could I find that beautiful place of repose? So we've arrived. Again in the stillness. We've declared our word to the universe, saying, I am open and receptive to the guidance, to the inspiration, to the courage, and to the wisdom of the one who knows. And then we smile, because the one who knows is always there waiting for us. It never went anywhere. We wandered off, but it never went anywhere. And so by stopping and just touching that place, I invite you to touch your heart chakra, if you would. And then we move the head into the heart, so the head-heart comes together. Thoughts and feelings merge. And so when thoughts arise, they're loving thoughts. They're compassionate thoughts. And we feel that love of existence, the love that exists within us and all around us, the love of the live oak trees that support the tree ferns all up and down, the beautiful ancient tree, as it reaches up to the heavens and drinks in the light of the sun. And as it puts its ancient roots deep, deep down into the sandy soil of Ocean Springs, holding the land in place so that when the hurricanes come, the trees hold the land in place. That's what the locals say. And you feel connected that we inter are. And so I invite you now to join with me in the heart salutation. As we say, I honor you. I respect you. I love you. You are an aspect of myself. I love you and thank you for loving me. I open to the inspiration of each moment. I drink from the well of love. I open to the mystery of belonging. I bow to the sacred in you. When you're in that place, in you, and I am in that place in me, there is only one here. Tatwam Asi. I am that. All there is that. And smiling. I invite you to open your eyes. to be here now. To open your arms like Seamus did. Stretch the body. You got the body. You got the mind. You got the heart. You got the soul. There's a basket in the back of the room. There's a brief board meeting after church and the new class sign-up sheet in the foyer.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org.